Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyrie, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome, dear listeners, to Season 15, Episode 6. I'm your host, Otis Gyrie, and in this episode, I'll be performing three tales to terrify you, courtesy of author Kyle Harrison. Tonight, we'll hear stories of natal nastiness, caustic caverns, and unusual universities. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first two spine-tingling stories. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now, it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So, lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. Tonight we'll be exploring deeper into the works of author Kyle Harrison, who brings us each of tonight's excursions into the strange, the deadly, and the unknown. Come on, sit a spell, and I'll tell you a tale or two. While it's generally considered a pleasant and happy time, some of the worst horror can come from a sleepless night that a newborn babe can provide. So what happens when that newborn, who's been so perfect, suddenly is inconsolable? Well, two parents are about to see that things can, in fact, get worse than sleep deprivation. Without further ado, I present to you My Newborn Wouldn't Stop Screaming. April 2nd changed my life forever. Rita Mae was born at approximately 6:07 in the morning, and my wife and I brought her home the very next day. No one ever tells you how much a baby changes your life. It's one of those experiences that is hard to really put down in words. Well, I'm here to tell it to you straight. There won't be any sugarcoating here. Being a parent is a full-time job, and a lot of times it feels like you want to pull your hair out. Now, don't get me wrong, we immediately fell in love with Rita. For the first 2 weeks, as a matter of fact, you could say she was the perfect little angel. In fact, I'd never seen a baby act so good. My wife, Stephanie, was overjoyed with being able to breastfeed, getting Rita into a sleep routine, and even having a little time for herself, since Rita was accommodating so well to her bassinet right off the bat. Those early days would make any parent immediately think about having another kid if they were all so amazing and well-behaved like our newborn. Something changed, though, at that two-week mark. I wish I could say for sure what it was. I had to work that day, and Steph took our little girl to the doctor for her first round of vaccinations, a routine appointment that every child has to endure. We knew to expect some fussiness after the shots were given. The doctor also advised us to make sure she was fed regularly and not dehydrated. According to them, sleepiness was a side effect of the medicine, so after the screaming died down, Rita would get drowsy and we would get back to our same old routine, like before. The problem is, that never happened. On my lunch break, I called Steph to see how our little princess was doing, only to hear a loud shriek that made my ears want to burn. I'll call you later. I should, as I hung up and frowned, wondering how long our newborn had been upset. I assumed it was just a simple crying spell, and it would be over by the time I got home. Instead, that afternoon, as I walked in, I heard Rita squealing, and Steph was pacing the kitchen trying to burp her. "Hey, there's my little angel. How's Daddy's girl?" I cooed. Steph shot me a dirty look and offered the squealing infant to me. "I don't know what's wrong with her. I've tried everything. Bottles, blankets, bath, you name it. I've tried it," she admitted as she tried to hold back tears. "I think she's clearly distressed. Earlier, when I tried to breastfeed, she bit me so hard that it drew blood." Rita continued to squeal as I rocked her and looked at our baby girl in concern. "Do you think we should go to the emergency room? Did you call the doctor?" I asked. Steph nodded as she paced to the refrigerator. "The pediatrician's got a free opening on Thursday, but that's days away. Maybe we should go to the ER. It's been hours now and it's nonstop. I think that lab tech did something. I don't know." I didn't know what to do either. We don't live close to a hospital, and I knew the drive would be taxing, especially because I was supposed to go to work the next day. No one gives you an instruction manual for this sort of stuff. "Let's go ahead and go. Better to be safe than sorry," I told my wife. We loaded up the car and put our newborn in the rear-facing car seat, all while she continued to cry and scream, anxiety levels spiking as we drove down the road. Steph sat back there with her, trying to comfort her, but I soon saw firsthand nothing seemed to be working. My mind began to race as I wondered what could possibly be the matter. What if Steph was right, and the tech had punctured a nerve? Was our daughter going to be all right? As soon as we got to the emergency room, I fully expected that Rita's wails would get us seen immediately. But reality set in when we were given paperwork to fill out and placed in the waiting room alongside everyone else. We sat down, and I tried my best to focus on the questionnaire. But the more Rita cried and screamed, the more irritated I became. Not with her, but with the hospital staff. They seemed to take no interest in her suffering, letting other clearly less urgent cases into the triage. "Maybe we should go somewhere else. There's a small neighborhood urgent care down the road," I told Steph. "Yeah, but they only accept cash. We don't have that kind of money." I'm worried that we were bound to be at the hospital all night, so I got up and called my boss. Told him I wouldn't be coming in the next morning. He wasn't too happy, but he claimed he understood. Family comes first. All while I was doing this, I kept hearing Rita and wondered if she was even catching her breath. This was insane, I thought as I walked back and looked back at Steph apologetically. The ER was at a standstill, and no one could tell me for sure when we'd be seen. It was pissing me off. My little girl was in excruciating pain, and these assholes didn't even seem to care. I marched up to the glass, banging to get their attention. John, that's not going to help, Steph told me angrily. But I wasn't listening. We'd been waiting for hours and still hadn't even gotten a bed. We should have been sent straight up to labor and delivery. What's the holdup? I demanded. Sir, you need to take a seat. I understand your concerns, but right now, labor and delivery cannot accommodate anyone. There's nothing we can do, the nurse said, but it was in a harsh tone. Something about that tone set me off, and I started to raise my voice. Don't be condescending with me. Our baby's in pain, and you're just telling me to shrug it off? She got on her radio and muffled something, which only made me more upset. Hold on. Did you just call security on me? Because I'm mad that you haven't lifted a finger to help my baby. A moment later, an officer twice my size entered the room. Steph grabbed my shoulder, giving me a look. Maybe we should just go, she said. I looked over to Rita, who was continuing to squeal and looked like she couldn't even breathe properly, my heart breaking as I realized the hospital was close to throwing us out. If you do not take a seat and cooperate, then I'm afraid you'll be asked to leave, the guard warned. But I'd had enough. I grabbed our stuff and marched out. Part of me felt foolish. We were no closer to figuring out why Rita was upset. But I was tired of feeling that my time was being wasted. On the drive home, Steph gave me a stink eye, but agreed we had chosen to go at the wrong time. There's an urgent care pediatrics, but it won't be open until the morning, she said, checking her phone. It was better than nothing, and as much as I hated the prospect of letting our little baby scream all night, I wasn't sure we had a choice. When we got home, we took shifts to take care of her, trying to make sure she ate or had a diaper change. Rita never stopped wailing. I was sure she was in excruciating distress, and we were doing nothing to make it better. Our own stress was through the roof. I told my wife to get a bit of sleep if she could, and I took Rita to the guest room. The walls were thicker in there, so I guessed if one of us brought her in to cry, the other could get some much-needed shut-eye. Steph admitted sleep was going to be difficult. Even without hearing her infant, her motherly instincts took over and she was up checking on us almost every half hour. I'm handling her so you can get some sleep, I told her as I tried again to rock Rita. Her face was a bright red by now, and I couldn't even imagine how she'd managed to scream all day. My mind told me that this had to be impossible. If she was that deprived of oxygen, she would have passed out. Or there were moments when she caught her breath, but I simply wasn't noticing it. It couldn't possibly be this bad. I didn't want to imagine it permanently harming her, but with each passing moment at home, that dreaded thought lingered in my mind, especially as I looked at her and saw her veins popping near her neck and forehead. What if it caused permanent brain damage, or worse, brain death? I thought frantically. And yet here I was, sitting in the dark, unable to do a single thing to help her out. As I rocked her, her piercing squeals heightened my anxiety with each passing second. My fear was compounded by searching for similar cases online. Many of the things people claimed happened to their newborn were terrifying. Nightmare-inducing images of babies with bleeding mouths and ears filled my screen. It was enough to make my stomach turn end over end. This couldn't possibly be happening to my Rita. When Steph took over to let me rest, my head was filled with frightening thoughts of what could be happening. Yet, somehow, we made it through the night. I think sheer exhaustion finally took us past our breaking point. In the morning, Rita was still in pain, her throat dry from her screams, her little body wailing. Steph was trying her best to keep it together as we hurried and got her in the car again. We're holding out hope that the pediatric urgent care would have the answers we needed. But it wound up as a dead end. They did a cursory check of Rita, including her lungs and checking her for infection. But after running the tests, they surprised us and said there was nothing noticeably wrong with her. No fever, no broken bones, no signs of trauma. If you ask me, this is just a short phase your baby's going through. She took fluids like normal, so there's really no need to worry. You simply just have to endure it. My wife looked like she was about to snap. They simply didn't believe us, she said when we left. No baby could scream that long or be unable to sleep. And so, because our story was so unfathomable, they sent us on our merry way thinking we were just a pair of typically overly concerned parents. I was at a loss. We'd gone to the doctors and finally gotten tests done, but nothing explained what was happening to her. Think of this as waiting for a butterfly to emerge from a cocoon. The transformation itself can be a little ugly, the nurse said as we walked out of the urgent care office. I didn't even bother saying thank you. In my mind, they'd done absolutely nothing to help us. I don't think I can handle much more of this, Steph lamented as we got home and tried to settle Rita again with every trick in the book. Her screams only seemed to get worse. She kept crawling and scratching, hitting and wailing. It was clear she was desperate for our help. I knew that I wasn't as competent as a doctor, so I wasn't about to challenge their diagnosis. Instead, I did the only thing I could think of and told my job I would try to come in the next day. I had to get this off my mind. Steph wasn't too happy when I gave her that news.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
You're just going to leave me here alone so you can get away from her? She snapped. I wasn't in a mood to argue. Rita was driving us up a wall with her painful cries, and we were turning on each other. I apologized and left not long after that, promising I'd check in to see if Rita had finally settled. We have to trust that the doctors know what they're talking about. If something was wrong, they'd know, I told her. They didn't even do an internal scan. What if something is inside her and hurting her? Steph asked desperately. They did all the tests they felt were necessary, I told her. But I had my doubts too. Something was wrong with my daughter. That much was clear. The only thing I could think of was her recent checkup. So when I went to work and had a bit of free time, I called the clinic to find out precisely what they'd given to Rita that day. Oh, little Rita Mae, how is she? The nurse asked cheerfully on the phone. I didn't bother trying to convince them of any issues and repeated my inquiry. Just typical shots we give to every newborn at this stage. I must say, I meant to call and ask your wife how she was handling it. She couldn't even bear to watch when we administered the needle. I picked up on that choice of words and asked the nurse to explain. Well, what I mean is that she stepped out of the room when we gave the vaccine. It's actually pretty common, I guess. No one wants to see their baby in that sort of pain. I thanked the nurse, trying not to panic as my mind wondered why this felt significant. Stephanie had left the room. What if they'd done something to Rita that wasn't on the record? Another thought crossed my mind as I drove home. What if one of the nurses had discreetly swapped out Rita with another newborn in the clinic? It was the type of scenario that no parent wanted to even fathom, but it could fit all of the behavioral issues we'd seen. Had we foolishly been doting on a baby we didn't know, an infant that was screaming frantically to be returned to her own family? Was our Rita out there somewhere right now, trying desperately to let whoever had taken her know that this was a terrible mistake? As I pulled into a driveway, I couldn't help but to take a long breath. I was letting my imagination run wild. There was no reason to suspect something so nightmarish had happened. I just need to be here and support my wife, and we'll get through this, I told myself as I walked inside the house. To my surprise, as I unlocked the door, I soon was greeted with silence. The small duplex we rented was dark, and I sighed in relief. Surely this was a good sign Rita had finally settled down. I dropped the keys and walked into the nursery, flipping on the lights, eager to see our sleeping little princess. Instead, I was greeted with a manifestation of all my fears combined. A blood-soaked mattress. I stood there staring at it in disbelief and then toward the floor, where I saw what looked like a tiny trail of mucus and blood zigzagging toward the door. The small crib she'd been lying in was all torn apart as if by sheer force. I turned and called out to my wife, but there was no response. My heart pounded as I followed the trail of blood and guts into our bedroom, the soft gleam of my phone light revealing more gory viscera on display in our king-size bed. My heart sank as I turned on the light and saw Stephanie lying there, in her own blood, her legs open, covered in scratches and teeth marks as I saw what had happened. Our newborn, or whatever had replaced her, had forcibly pushed itself inside of my wife's body again. The sheer amount of tissue and blood that covered the bed told me that Steph had done her best to fight off this monster, but the results had been a losing battle. Now she was decomposing, staring wide-eyed and soulless up at the sky as the creature wriggled under her belly. Torn in every direction, I saw the creature pulsing with a heartbeat inside my dead wife's womb. I scrambled and backed away from the horrific scene, calling 911 as I bailed out of the door and struggled to catch my breath. I was hardly making sense to the operator, but I gave him my address, and they said they'd be there within 30 minutes. Somewhere in that span of time, the miniature demon that had crawled its way into our lives and fooled us into believing it was our sweet Rita Mae vanished into the night. When the techs got there, all they found was what was left of my wife. It's like something shoved its way inside her body and ate her from the inside out, one technician said in disbelief. It was a small comfort, but they told me that there were signs of a struggle. Steph had tried to fight back. The creature must have been waiting until we were so exhausted that we couldn't put up a fight, I realized sourly as I thanked them for coming. They told me that the police wanted to question me, typical procedure. One thing swirls around in my mind as I try to make sense of what little sanity I have left. Where's my daughter? What happened to her? I fear I may never know and be labeled a monster myself, because who would believe this shocking story? In the distant air, amid the shadows, I hear a newborn baby wail. Is it my Rita? Or is it the creature beckoning me to my own demise? I sat there, here on my porch, for an hour, waiting for the police and heard the infant in the woods calling out to me. I don't know what I'll find out there, but I feel compelled to find it. I hope you enjoyed My Newborn Wouldn't Stop Screaming by Kyle Harrison, as performed by yours truly. If you enjoyed that tale and would love to read more from tonight's very talented featured author, you can help support him by visiting simplyscarypodcast.com/Kyle-Harrison. That's simplyscarypodcast.com/KYLE-HARRISON. Thanks again for your support of this program and tonight's featured author. Well, I hope you weren't enjoying a nice sandwich while you listened to the end of that story. But I think you should know the real Rita is nice and safe and in the hands of only one of the finest secret organizations. She'll be fine, trust me. Down, down, down we go into the rabbit hole. We now join a search and rescue team on its way into the depths of the earth, undreamed of since the ages of Jules Verne. But what seems like a simple rescue is now a dip into a world that no one is supposed to see. Without further ado, I present to you the Ulthar Caves. The following three journals detail the harrowing account of the attempted rescue at Site 321. From the Journal of Arthur Warren. Darkness is covering me on all sides. Dangling by only a few cords in the depths of the earth, I know that it's unlikely even if I scream, no one above will ever hear me. I'm gonna die down here, If this cave doesn't kill me, the nightmares that lurk in the shadows will. I hear them moving about the cave walls, scrambling to find me with smell and sound. Then I felt a jerk of my bungee cord and plummeted toward the unknown. 10 hours earlier. I'm a cave rescuer. What that means is when teams of ropers find themselves stuck underground, I'm the one that's supposed to go get them out. I don't get many missions these days, but when I do, I know they come from my sister-in-law, Marjorie. The message she sent me was short but foreboding. Collapse at Ulthar Caverns. Bring the team ASAP. Marjorie works for the military, and it was little surprise to find out when I did arrive at the site in question. It was, in fact, a man-made borehole deep underground, away from prying eyes. Besides myself, I trust only 4 other individuals to be able to do this job, and all of them have years of experience. Matt, Jonah, Harley, and Brett are about the best cave divers you can get trapped with. As our helicopter landed on the edge of the cliff base, Marjorie was the one to fill us in on what was going on. We've been drilling this site for the past few years to retrieve fossil fuels, raw materials that are hard to find on the East Coast, and also because it's one of the most hollow points this side of the Grand Canyon. We were about to reach the next depth marker when the collapse occurred. A rock slide from the western trench of the expanse has buried our team in this pocket of caves here, she said, showing us the wide map. What's this? Brett asked, pointing towards some of the man-made facilities on the upper levels. During our time here, we've managed to set up several freight elevators that can take us deep into the Earth's mantle. In fact, some of them even run down past the depth of our team, straight to the subterranean lava lakes. Marjorie paused and cleared her throat, clearly trying to find the right words for what she had to say next. Ordinarily, we only send highly equipped robotic drones to that level for scoping and radar, but we believe there may be a way to follow those tunnels back up to the level where our miners are currently trapped. So you want us to go down to get out? Matt said. We're going to try to push through on both sides. One team will head down the main pit here, and a second team will gradually bring drill equipment to the other side of the rock slide here. If we have the right, and we do the timing, you should be able to bring them supplies they need to survive until our drill teams reach them. Otherwise, it's just a waste of resources, my sister-in-law explained. As my men began to converse among themselves, she gestured to me to come speak to her privately, and we stepped into a different part of the tent. Samuel's down there, she whispered her husband's name. What in blazes was he thinking? I asked. We've never really worried too much about structural problems before this, but a recent discovery changed the entire trajectory of this mission, she explained. What do you mean? She glanced out toward my team and added, this has to stay between us for now. I pulled her a little further away and muttered, I can't make promises if my team will be in danger. What exactly did you find down there? Difficult to say for sure, but during the last scouting, Sam said that there were some readings that just didn't match up with our previous scans, she explained. Your pockets of the cavern? I asked. She shook her head, walking over to a briefcase and taking out a small laptop, showing me an image of the caves down below. This scan was taken 3 days ago by radar, she said. Then she pulled up another image, and it looked entirely different. This one was made only yesterday. I found myself immediately confused. Are you trying to tell me that the cave changed? That's not possible. Sam and the others were heading down there to find out why there was a discrepancy. We tried to do another geological reading after this, but we kept getting interference from something below. Caves just don't reshape themselves, Marjorie. There has to be a mistake here, I told her, and I hope that your mission will give us an answer. 2200 hours. The freight elevator looked old, worn out from overuse, and didn't really instill confidence in any of us. The unease in my team only increased when Marjorie's supervisor insisted that armed men go down with us. Are you expecting the rocks to attack? Jonah teased. But the soldiers were stoically silent. Made us all feel as though they were hiding something. Slowly, we descended into the pit. Hundreds of meters flashed by in mere seconds as the world above became just a distant memory. All of us were wondering how deep we'd go before finally reaching our destination. I've been in many subterranean areas in my job, and it never gets easy to face the unknown. Halfway down, the elevator slammed to a stop and all of us fell on the floor as the power shut off. Whoa! Is everyone okay? Brett shouted. His voice echoed in the darkness. The radio in my belt crackled to life. Arthur? Arthur, this is Marjorie. We seem to have a new problem. The rock slide has shifted again and the power is cut off in your sector. You'll have to traverse the remainder of the pit by rope.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All of the soldiers activated the flashes on their helmets as we searched for the emergency exit and climbed to the roof of the elevator. Out in the emptiness of the pit, only further darkness greeted us. How much further down do you suppose we have to go? Matt asked. His only headlamp hardly even illuminated a few feet below. Probably another good 2 miles, one soldier admitted, as we began to set up a pulley system on the roof of the elevator. All of us would start descending one by one from this point, cautiously testing our weight on the rope as we lowered our bodies toward the unknown. Before we dropped, I double-checked the protective gear we had on. As we went lower, temperatures in the pit would increase and oxygen would become limited. Every second mattered and we couldn't afford mistakes. Already, we'd been down here nearly half a day. As we finished the checks, I heard a strange groaning noise somewhere inside the cave, and all of us switched on our headlamps, quickly scanning the rock walls. Must have just been the release of trapped air, Brett said. All of us knew better, but we didn't argue. The journey below was going to be perilous enough, and we couldn't afford tension to get the better of us. Soon, we were moving down the chasm, the dim light from our headlamps the only thing keeping us from bumping into one another as we went. Every few moments, we'd hear the strange groaning again. It sounded like breathing. And then there were noises that reminded me of the clatter of hooks. There was something here. All of us could feel its unseen eyes on us. Suddenly, the cable began to sway and shake. Something above was causing us to become unstable. Matthew, what do you see? I shouted. The groaning noise became louder and louder as the rope buckled, and I held on for dear life. If something severed the connection above, it would be a long drop to certain death. Matthew's screams echoed from above as I heard what sounded like his bones breaking. I tried to get a good look, but he was too far above me. Then, a second later, silence filled the pit, and all of us became stiff as boards. We could hear whatever had just killed our friend moving along the cave walls. I made this strange rattling noise as though searching for us by sound alone. Then it stopped and I held my breath. I was sure that it was right there on the wall beside me. I saw a gleaming patch of yellow eyes. And then Matthew's bungee broke free and his body tumbled on top of me. I lost my helmet and watched as both he and my equipment spiraled to the pit below. In those few short seconds of light, I also caught a glimpse of the strange creatures. They resembled scorpions made entirely of stone-faced walls, but with two stingers instead of just one. Thankfully, the darkness kept me safe for a few moments longer. Then the cable gave way again and all of us fell in unison. Oh, 100 hours. We've made it to the bottom of the borehole. We are approximately 1,640 kilometers below the surface. The fall from the elevator should have killed us, but somehow we managed to survive by the grace of God. Our supplies are even more limited due to the collapse, though. Everything is scattered about so far in the cave tunnels that we have no time to recover them. Instead, we have to begin the ascent to the facilities above where the miners are trapped. Our only chance of making it out alive now rests with the secondary team. After saying a few short words for Matthew, I led the group toward one of the meandering tunnels. These are just barely large enough to crawl in, and they're so hot. This deep, we're on the edge of the liquid core of our planet, and every move we make draws us closer. The heat's making us tense and delirious, along with the continuous strange noises from the creatures that dwell here. Before long, we reach a larger pocket of caves and get the chance to stand. I spot some of the drones that were once used to survey these mines, and feel dread overwhelm me again. The equipment had been dismantled and torn apart by something large, even bigger than the rock scorpions we've already encountered. And the deep indentations in the ground warn me that it's taking the same path we are. We should reroute, Jonah suggested. We choose a lower tunnel, one that risks us getting closer to the core. But we have little choice if we want to survive a few more hours without incident. We must move from one nightmare to the next, straight toward the mouth of hell. From the Journal of Harley Prescott. We found a city at the bottom of the world. Nestled against the liquid lava of the core, it was clearly designed to once be hospitable for life, but not for humans. 10 hours prior, we descended to rescue a team of miners in a pocket of cave that collapsed. Since then, we've gone much further down, trying desperately to outmaneuver gigantic creatures that call these tunnels home. Our sense of direction is gone, and for the past few hours, I'm certain that even our leader didn't know for sure where we were headed. I didn't want to voice my concerns, but it did seem like the cave itself was alive, ever so subtly changing shape and direction. But I told myself it was just my mind, trying to grasp at the strangeness of this hellscape. Now that we've found what looks like ancient tombs, I've found myself questioning my sanity again. No human could ever live this far down into the earth. So what civilization called this subterranean palace home? Inside the first foyer, the heat dissipates and a cool air covers our team. Arthur tells us to take a few breaths, and I use the time to examine the material the building's made of. Describing the structure as being like a city felt wrong, though, because the further we went, the more bizarre the shape it took. It ran in every direction through the caverns, including steps and passages that felt impossible, zigzagging across the walls and ceilings as though it had once been home to thousands of people, maybe even millions. I was sure I was seeing things, but it wasn't long before my teammates voiced their concerns as well. This is insane, Arthur. No way any of this can be built in the last millennia. I can't even get a reading on any of the materials, Jonah said. We need to worry about the mission and nothing else. Let Marjorie's people handle the intellectual stuff, he insisted. He was smart not to focus on it for too long. I feared if I let my mind wander of what kind of creatures had made these structures, I'd likely go insane. 0500 hours. We came to a halt in a massive chasm that stretched beyond the outer core into what appeared to be a bottomless hole. All of us could see signs of a strange life teeming below in the lava. Worm-like creatures that slithered and shook violently the moment we invaded their space. How long had it been since humans had been here, if ever? Arthur kept us focused on the task at hand. From here, we're expected to scale up. The facilities that the military were urging are about 10 miles above us. If we hadn't lost our equipment in the early fall, Well, it'd be an easy climb, but right now, it's looking like we'll have to find a way to do it the old-fashioned way. All of us knew what that meant, and without a failsafe to keep us in place, the climb against the pit wall would be extraordinarily perilous. It was asking us to risk our lives. But then again, all of us knew what we were signing up for the moment we started a job. Strange hell beasts and impossible mazes weren't exactly par for the course, but I knew we had faced nightmarish caves almost as bad before. "How much oxygen do you think we have left up there?" Brett asked. He was the voice of reason. Already we'd exhausted half of our own supply, and we'd lost communication. We had no way of being sure that Marjorie or her team would be coming. We could find ourselves trapped as well. It's possible they may have already run out, but we can't simply turn around. This is our only way back to the surface, Arthur reminded us. Odds are against us, I admitted as we checked our own equipment again. As though to echo that feeling, we heard a weird breathing noise from the structure behind us. The soldiers that were still alive quickly aimed their rifles toward the opening, and all of us froze to wait and see what would crawl out. Then Jonah emerged from the darkness. "Whoa, you guys are looking tense. Everything okay?" he asked when he saw their weapons. "What in blazes were you doing? Where'd you go?" Arthur asked. I hadn't even noticed he'd left, I thought. Sorry, sir, I got a little sidetracked. But it may have been for our benefit. I found something I think you'll want to see." Jonah led us back to the nameless city, guiding us through the dense fog the way anyone familiar with it would. It astonished me he had managed to memorize all this so quickly. Then we entered a grand opening in the cave wall and found ourselves standing in what looked like a room full of mirrors. It stretched toward the upper mantle of the cave for miles. "I think it's some kind of transport," Jonah explained, pointing toward a nearby control panel. Somehow, the power was operational. Not in a language we understood, though. "It would be risky to use this," Arthur commented. Jonah only laughed. "You can't seriously think we have the manpower to make it up that cliff? This pit is nearly at the core, the very core of the Earth. It's a wonder we're even alive. This transport's the only thing that's going to get us where we need to go." None of us dared to join in his rebuttal, even if we were sure he was right. For a few moments, you couldn't hear a pin drop in the room. Then Arthur gave the orders. "Harley, check the perimeter, and then we can see if this thing can haul us up." I saluted and grabbed my own equipment, moving toward the eastern corridor for a sweep of the tunnels. I wasn't exactly sure what I was looking for, but the commander was rarely wrong when he gave us these instructions. Something about all of this was off. He must sense it, I realized. A moment later, I saw what that was. There was a body, or what was left of it, in the next corner of the hallway. It looked like it had drained the energy, the color, and the life straight from its corpse. All that was left now was just a hollow shell. I reached for it to get a closer look when I heard a sharp noise from the mirror room. Running back inside, I saw that the room had already activated on its own, and two more of the soldiers were now completely vaporized. "What happened?" I asked as the door sealed. We were moving at a rapid pace toward the upper caverns. "This technology appears to be harvested from life source to traverse space itself. I checked the geological readings in this area before coming here. There's no way this elevator should even be working," Brett commented. "In other words, we're moving in between dimensions at the moment," Jonah said with a nod. "It killed them," I said, focusing on what little remained of the soldiers. "This tech must connect to a point in the facility above, meaning the team there may be aware that we're on our way," Arthur realized. "Do you suppose they might have triggered similar tech in the cave above?" I guessed. I recalled my misgivings about the structure, the way the cave had been alive. If this really was alien in nature at all, it suddenly made perfect sense. Every movement it made was on the way an organism protected itself. We can't speculate until we arrive, Arthur said as he gathered the weapons. Besides the three of us, only one soldier still remained. All of us were gravely aware it was possible that we were walking into another trap. 0800 hours. The shimmering mirrors finally darkened and the transport shook, telling us that we'd arrived. Arthur passed the rifle to me and told me to be ready for whatever might be on the other side. I wasn't. The doors opened into a rudimentary passage of stones. The cave was dark, cramped, and quiet, not nearly as alien as I had expected. The passage narrowed, and I kept the weapon near my side as Arthur stayed in the middle while Brett and Jonah protected our rear. Light was difficult in the dense space, but we made do for the next few meters until we ran into a massive sheet of metal. This must be the facility that Marjorie said they were using as a base, Arthur commented. We moved to the east to find an entrance, the cavern widening as we followed strange formations on a rock. A closer look told me they couldn't possibly all be rocks. There were fingers emerging from the cave wall. In some spaces, it looked like the cave had swallowed them whole. As we turned a corner, I think we all gasped at once. There in the rock face was what was left of Marjorie's husband, Samuel. Half of his body somehow melted into the rocks as we got closer, and I checked for vitals. Somehow, he was still alive. The moment I pricked his fingers, Sam's eyes opened frantically, and he gasped for breath. Calm down, man. It's Arthur. Arthur Bourne. Marjorie sent us down here. You came to rescue us. Sam's eyes were filled with tears. Then he said something I didn't expect. Why? Why did you come? You should have left us to die. Marjorie wouldn't want that, Arthur said firmly. Don't you understand? She's gone, Sam proclaimed as he looked toward his melted body. This is hell, and we're already dead. From the Journal of Samuel Perch. When we first broke through the mantle into the deeper pockets of tunnels, it felt like we were on the cusp of greatness. That excitement soon turned to dread. Farther we went into this unknown pocket of Earth, the more unusual our surroundings became. My team was not prepared for the nightmares of the caves. Less than 6 hours after breaking into the next pocket of tunnels, we were trapped. But it wasn't an accident that placed us here. I'm the one responsible for causing the collapse. I only wish those above hadn't tried to rescue us. 13 hours later, I watched as the massive drills poured through the rocks, my wife trying to rescue me. I wished so much that I had a chance to contact them, warn them to stay away. Had they learned nothing from the past 48 hours? I shouted, trying to get her attention as the drill went deeper. But I knew from where I was in the cave, it would be like yelling across a football field. Soon I started to see dark liquid slime pour up from between the cracks. It wasn't oil. It was moving and forming into strange worms. How deep is it? Into the next pocket, my chief engineer, Ackley, shouted over the machinery. But I wasn't listening, though. I was watching the slime ooze out and ordering my team to back away. The cave reacted the way any living organism would to protect itself. It started to shake and reform, swallowing up my soldiers as Marjorie's drill kept coming toward us. She just kept drilling. Even from my angle, I could see that she had this look of determination in her eyes. And then I realized her plan. She knew that she wasn't going to survive at this rate. I held my tongue and breath at the same time as she pressed the sequence on the equipment, then closed her eyes. I knew it was coming, but the detonation was deafening. A few of the soldiers were thrown back by the impact, but it was the ones nearest to the blast that faced real horror. From the impact site, I saw what looked like more of the strange slime emerging, Just barely, with enough cohesiveness to be a life form, though. Scrambling for anything to consume. It was screaming, the way a vicious bird of prey might when scooping up a victim. The second detonation just barely buried out the shrieks of the creature as the equipment fell into the hole. I saw Marjorie's crane fall headfirst into the pit and made a gasp, but it was already too late. I saw my team fall into the maw of this pit next, and I knew it was over. Then the wall of rock consumed me as well. Hours passed by. Silence and darkness were my only companions. I could feel my body, but I was trapped. Every part of me melded with the stones as I felt pain throbbing through me. I wanted so badly to die, but unfortunately I had to endure more. 4 hours later. Soon the other rescue team arrived, Arthur Hill telling us that everything was going to be okay. His eyes told me he was lying. He'd seen the nightmares this hell offered. And then I remembered my other team members, the ones that were still alive, and warned them. You need to leave before they hurt you, before their madness comes with thoughts of revenge. They think you're responsible for all this. I already lost my wife, Arthur. I don't want to lose you as well. As soon as I gave the warning, I heard the engineers enter the room. The slime had infected their bodies, turning them into mindless drones for the strange alien life form that called this cave home. Akili shouted orders, telling everyone to stay in the caves, as one of Arthur's team, also obediently, handed over their weapons. Jonah, what's the meaning of this? Brett asked. Jonah's dead. We saw his shell down below. I'm the next evolution, the man said, kicking his former friend to the ground. I could see the black slime swirling behind his eyes, easily controlling the new life form and using the human body to move and think. I knew it had only one more goal now, after being locked in these caves for so long, to infect all of us and spread to the world above. Again, the cave shifted and moved. I found myself somehow alive, clinging to sanity as I looked up at my former friends. I had my body again, but it hardly even felt worth it. All of my friends were slaves to this mad virus. Just kill me and get this over with. You don't need me alive, I told them, spitting on their shoes. These other humans will be our first wave into the world. We can treat them with the same respect they gave us over the millennia, Akili told me as he checked my body for injuries. But you will have a different fate. Your job will be to tell the truth of what you saw here. There will be a war, and we'll watch as you humans tear each other limb from limb, he said, his eyes, his black eyes, dilating. I looked toward the others, my mind racing for a solution. None of them could be allowed to escape this place. I saw a small grenade on the belt of one of the soldiers. It wasn't much, but it might give me a head start. I leapt for it, pushing Akili out of the way. Uncorking the grenade, I tossed it toward his face, expecting the cave to react. The walls around me shook like the ocean as I scrambled to find a way out now, the soldiers also screaming and running as the diseased Akili burst apart and pushed millions of worms into the air, all of them crawling toward us as we ran away. We made it barely back to the next tunnel in time as the whole ceiling began to fall, and I felt my body go numb. This was exactly how Marjorie died. Was history repeating itself? My life felt chaotic and frozen, all in a single moment, as the rocks began to surround me. Then I felt a sharp tug. Arthur was still there, risking everything to save me. Come on, we can make it before this entire place collapses, he said. I don't know why he thought I was worth saving, but I listened and ran. We moved toward the opening where Marjorie's drill had burst through and toward the south elevator. It was miles from the surface, but the only chance we had left. I stood up and looked toward my right into the endless darkness, then heard shrieks coming after us. The worms were still alive from the blast. I scrambled up the nearby rocks toward the elevator, trying to use the stones as cover as the sound came closer, hoping we could make it. Then they appeared. There were three of them, strange black creatures covered in a scaly material that looked like it had been taken from the rock itself. They moved with six powerful legs and spread out toward the exterior of the mine, gnashing at the earth, burying new tunnels as they tried desperately to find us. As I watched in stunned silence as we got to the elevators, I recognized the creatures were blind, with only a massive mouth and snout to guide them in this maze. Arthur activated the lift. We were the only two humans still alive, and now a chance to see the surface again was in our hands. After seeing such monsters, stepping into the cold elevator almost seemed like a comfort. I looked down at the pit below. The cave collapsed, revealing more of this strange, forgotten world. There was a massive, dark tapestry of webs and creatures crawling about below, an entire civilization of ungodly monsters. It was their nest, I thought, and as I stared across the chasm in that cold light, I could see at least 20 small cocoons wrapped about at different angles. The size and shape of the mummified objects told me that these might be people, and as I kept watching, I heard a loud roar from the bottom. Something far bigger and more ancient was stirring. We were fortunate to be headed far enough away. All we could hear was its guttural shrieks. 3 hours later, we reached the surface. I immediately gave the order to bomb the entrance to the mine. There's nothing left in these caves that can be of use to us. The dangers of that subterranean civilization are too much for us to even attempt it. And then I offered Arthur a drink. "Fallen friends," I said, raising my glass and trying not to get teary-eyed. I still couldn't come to terms with my own loss. The cave had taken everything, but I felt some comfort in knowing no others would ever dig here again. I'll file a report, make sure that this location is quarantined. Permanently, if possible, Arthur told me. Both of us watched as helicopters flew in and obeyed the order. Blasting closed the caves, sealing the nightmares away. It's been a long time since then, and I've tried to make these caves a distant memory. But it's almost impossible when I know other strange darkness could be lurking below. Arthur has asked if I might try to discover more about the world beneath our feet, or tell others of what we saw. I've kept this all secret for so long, hoping to avoid that. But I think it's inevitable now, because he's gotten another mission to a different cave with a similar background to the one I was trapped in, and we both know it might lead to another subterranean temple. I know this information needs to be spread as quickly as possible before anything else crawls up from the darkness. We must all be prepared for the war that's coming. Hell is coming to Earth. And it's likely we are going to lose. I hope you enjoyed The Ulthar Caves by Kyle Harrison, as performed by yours truly. Not exactly the realm of Jules Verne down there, is it? Bet they wished all they had to deal with was a bunch of dinosaurs. But body horror and disintegration is what they have. So body horror and disintegration is what they get. Thanks again for your support of this program and tonight's featured author. Now, before we go, I'd also like to take a moment to thank you personally for joining me on this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference, and it would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium, extended edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes featuring twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the Patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. you'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can purchase season passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs. Or become a patron for as little as $5 a month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyrie channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Storytime, dating back to 2014. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, too. Just search for Otis Gyrie. Until next week, stay spooky and get some sleep, if you can. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyrie. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyrie channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.